in your program today, you actually have a card that looks like this that says westbridgechurch.com/mystory. On the back there's a couple of real simple questions. If you want to take a minute and even fill this out during service, that'd be great. Or take it home with you. You can drop it in one of the giving stations. Or you can even go to that website, westbridgechurch.com/mystory, and answer those same questions online. And we'd love to be able to share your story. And we'll keep you anonymous if you prefer. You can check that and say, keep me anonymous. But just be able to share stories around here is one of the things that I think really encourages other people. So if you have a story of how somehow Westbridge has made a difference in your life and the love of Jesus has impacted you because of Westbridge Church, let us know about it. We'd love to share that. And then the other card in your program is this home church card. Home churches are groups of people, smaller groups of people that meet all over the area and get together for the purpose of building friendships and as a result of deepening community and deepening relationships, help each other grow in their faith as well. And so these are a bunch of groups that you can jump into, home churches that are available that are launching next week. And so you can just check the one that you're interested in, put your info, drop it into one of the giving stations as well. Excuse me. Awesome to have you with us. My name is Jeremiah. I'm one of the pastors here, and I want to say hello to those of you in our parent viewing area. Thanks for joining us there. That's a great option if you have small children you prefer to keep with you during the service. I also want to say hello to those of you joining us online and watching this online. Thanks for joining us there. One of the things you can do, if you have the YouVersion app, it's the Bible app, you can actually go to events in YouVersion and search for Westbridge, and all of our outline, our notes are... are on there every week. So you can actually take this and use it on your mobile device and fill it out there as well if you'd like to do that. Man, I'm so excited about today. I'm so excited about this series, All In. And you've probably seen some of our staff wearing some of these t-shirts. And I really believe this is one of the most critical and significant series that we've ever done. And I'll tell you why. Probably other than the very first series where we introduced the church to the community, this is a significant series for us. And that is not something that we say all the time. You don't find us all the time hyping up every series going, this is going to be the most amazing thing. It's going to change your life. We don't hype a lot of stuff, but this is a do not miss type of series. You know, we started Westbridge 11 years ago. And I've told this story a couple times. There's a story of a famous sea captain who would captain his ship, and any time that they saw pirates on the horizon, the call would come from the crow's nest, pirates, three ships on the horizon. And every time that happened, the captain would say, bring me my red shirt. And they'd go into battle, and then he'd hang the red shirt up afterwards. And after a little while of doing this, after several battles, the crew began to question him and said, why is it that every time we go into battle, you put on your red shirt? And he said, well, it's because if I get wounded in battle and start to bleed, then you won't see that I'm wounded, and I don't want you to lose confidence in the midst of the battle. And they were so in awe and inspired by that response. And so every time that the pirates would come over the horizon, pirates on the horizon, three ships, and then the captain would say, bring me my red shirt, and the men would be inspired. And one occasion in particular, the call came from the crow's nest, and it said, pirates on the horizon, 25 ships. And the captain said, bring me my brown pants. And I got to tell you, for the last 11 years, I've been calling for my brown pants, okay? There's been so many seasons where we're just like, man, I don't know what to do next, but God help us. And today we're launching this series. I can't think of another series that has more potential to shape us as a church family than this series that we are entering into right now. And here's why. This series, All In, is all about what it will look like for us as a faith community, as a church family, to walk out God's mission for Westbridge Church. And we're going to jump right into it. And if you're new here today, if you're like, man, I'm just kind of checking this place out for the first time, you could not have picked a better time to show up. Because today, you're going to get a behind-the-scenes look at the very heartbeat of why we do what we do. And here's what it is. This is our mission statement from day one. This has been our mission statement. This is why we started. This is what we do. People helping people find and follow Jesus. People helping people find and follow Jesus. From day one, we had one very, very simple mission, and that we would be people who are helping other people find and follow Jesus. And yet, here's what experience has taught us, is that over time, as more and more people are invited into this thing, we have to fight against complexity in order to stay true to that mission. that things become increasingly complex, and the only way for us to stay on track with that mission of helping people find and follow Jesus is to make sure that we keep it simple and that we fight complexity, that we fight for simplicity, and we stay on mission. And churches of all shapes and sizes have unintentionally created barriers to following Jesus. They never do it on purpose, but sometimes what happens is there becomes an unspoken dress code, or there becomes an insider sort of set of rules and regulations that you got to keep if you want to be in, or there becomes an insider language that only people on the inside understand, sort of Christianese verbiage. I can remember when my older sister was about 13, 14 years old, that her and her friends actually developed a secret language that they spoke to each other. And it used to drive me and my brother crazy. We're like, what are they saying? And it's so funny because when you think about that, churches sometimes unintentionally do the same thing. They have verbiage that makes sense if you're on the inside, but doesn't make sense if you're not. And it sometimes leaves people on the outside looking in. And what happens is churches have unintentionally become very good at practicing exclusion. And it's never intentional or malicious. It's just what creeps in when you're not completely focused on the mission. And we are not the first ones to deal with this. This is not a 21st century problem. This is not an American problem. It happened in the first century within just a few years of Jesus coming to earth. In the book of Acts, we read about a problem that was happening because those who were already on the inside started to create significant hurdles for those who were coming to faith in Jesus. People who already had faith in Jesus were creating barriers for people who were coming to faith in Jesus. Imagine that. And what's interesting about this story is that the insiders, they were Jesus' followers. They believed that they were doing the right thing, but they were excluding people in the process. And so this big debate happens, and in the middle of this giant debate, James, the brother of Jesus, who has become a leader of the church in Jerusalem, he stands up and he says this: "My judgment is that we should not make it difficult for those who are turning to God." If people are turning to God, if people already have a desire inside of them to explore faith in God and to turn towards God, then all we have to do is make sure that we don't make it difficult for them to do that. Let's just remove all the barriers. Here's people who are turning to God. Here's God, and here's people turning towards God, and they're moving in. Let's just take all the stuff in the middle and get rid of it. Let's remove all the barriers. Let's remove all the hurdles, and let's make sure that we create a place that just introduces people to Jesus, and then let's just let Jesus do what Jesus does. And to be honest with you, when we first started Westbridge, that was the driving force from the very beginning. That simple phrase has guided us from day one. If people are turning to God, let's not make it difficult for them. If people want to connect with God, let's remove any barriers to that. And that's why we do some of the things that we do around here. That's why there's no dress code at Westbridge. Honestly, sometimes people contact us, particularly holidays and Christmas and Easter and throughout different times of the year, and say, "Hey, we'd like to come and check out Westbridge. How should we dress?" And we always respond the same way: please wear something. That's the most critical part. We work really hard at explaining theological ideas in everyday language because we don't want to assume that everybody's walking in with a Bible degree. And so we just assume, hey, when you're coming in, we're going to talk about the scriptures, we're going to talk about the Bible, we're going to talk about theological ideas, but we're going to do it in a way that invites everybody into the conversation so that nobody's on the outside looking in. We do a modern style of music. Because here's what we recognize: the top 20 radio stations aren't playing hymns and organ music. You say, "Well, I really love that." You are welcome to listen to that as much as you want. But here, what we're trying to do is create an environment for people who are far from God. And sometimes people ask us, "Well, why is the music so loud?" And we say, "Well, here's the deal. If you like loud music, we're one of the only church options around for loud church music. There's a lot of options for quiet church music. We're one of the only options for people looking for loud church music. And we give you earplugs. And I also know this: I've heard some of you sing. We should keep it loud." We are transparent about our struggles. and flaws in our own lives. And here's why. Because we want to continually keep the shame level low. That's why you never hear someone speaking from the front who says, "Let me tell you what an incredible Jesus Junior I am." You don't get that from the people who speak at Westridge. What you get is, hey, here's where I've struggled. Here's stuff we've been through. Here's stuff I've dealt with. And here's how Jesus and his church have helped me move through that and gotten us through those seasons. Because we want to communicate that you can truly come as you are. And that's not just a cute phrase, but that we actually mean that. And that you can come as you are, you can show up, and together we help move each other forward from wherever that starting point is. We speak in everyday language. Like, if you and I were having coffee, this is how I would talk. I would probably tip over my coffee. My wife teases me all the time, "You're such a hand talker. This is like a boundary zone." But this is how I talk. If we were having coffee, this is how I would talk. I never walk into a bank and say, "I would like to make a deposit in the Jesus' name." And so why would I talk like that here, right? It's so funny. It's why oftentimes when people refer to me as Pastor Jeremiah, I'm like, it's just Jeremiah. You start saying pastor, I start looking for my dad, you know? And I don't call you Banker Bob. I don't call you Realtor Tim, right? Like, that's just what you do. That's not your name. So we do that because we want to make sure we keep the shame level low and there isn't a big distance. It's not like the holy bishop up on the stage and all the little minions who go to service. See, we want there to be like, no, we're all in this together. We value clarity over cleverness. That's why when you walk down our hallway, you see signs that say first grade. Like, that's not very clever. But you know who goes in there, don't you? First graders. Because here's what we've decided. It's better to be clear than simply to be clever. We allow people time and space as they move forward in their spiritual journey. This is so critical. My favorite stories are the ones where people tell me, "You know what? I came to church for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. I didn't believe. I was not a follower of Jesus. But I kept showing up because I really liked it here." That is a testament to the environment that we're creating here together. And when we say you don't have to believe in order to belong, we mean that. And I love hearing, "Man, I came for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and then finally something clicked. Finally I realized, I think I need to start following Jesus." Those are my favorite stories because it means that we're living out what we say, that we're actually giving people the space to process and to move forward and move at their own pace and get their questions answered. We talk about practical topics that apply to everyday life. We resource people with books and Bibles, and we give all of it away for free. We want to be generous, and any resources that we have, we give away for free. We confront busyness in our lives. We just focus on the weekend and home churches, not adding all kinds of a gazillion things to the calendar whenever possible. And we always choose to be consistent on the weekends, so that every weekend is a safe weekend to invite your friends. We never want there to be a weekend where you're like, "I don't know if that's really a good one to invite friends to. Like, I might have to," we want to keep the cringe factor really low. And we do all of those things intentionally. And the reason that we do that is because we're trying to introduce people to the love of Jesus. We're trying to remove all the stuff in the middle, all the barriers, all the hurdles, and say, "Man, if people are turning to God, let's not make it difficult for them. Let's make it easy and accessible." Now, here's why we do that. It's because people matter to God. People matter to God. And because people matter to God, they should matter to us. As a matter of fact, Jesus was having a conversation with a guy named Nicodemus, and John tells us about this interaction. And as part of that conversation, Jesus says this: "God loved the world so much that he gave his only son so that church people who believe in him," "so that everyone who believes in him would not be lost, but have eternal life." Everyone. God loved the world so much, he gave of himself so that everyone could have a relationship with God. And so today, I want to hear you say this. If this is your church home and you've been participating here and helping us create these amazing environments for people to come into, I want you to hear me say, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I want to say thank you to so many of you who have bought into this mission of helping people find and follow Jesus. We started this thing in a living room with 12 people. And 12 of us sat in a living room, and I had no idea how to start a church. Do not have a clue. And even to this day, when people ask me, like, man, we want to start a church. How should we do that? I'm like, don't ask me. I don't have a clue. Because we sat in a living room, and my master plan was, let's do a Bible study in a living room, and I guess if we do it long enough, we'll probably turn into a church. And then what happened was, we said, well, what if we created environments where people could just, where we remove all the barriers, and people are turning to God, let's make it easy for them. And the first night that we met, all 12 people said, yeah, let's do it. And I started calling for my brown pants. And we didn't know what to do, but we just said, okay, let's do a service. Many of you have heard this story before that we met again 2 weeks later, and we said, all right, here's the deal, guys. First service is a week from Sunday. Invite your friends. Well, where should we invite them? Just invite them, and when we have a spot, we'll tell you where to send them. So just invite them to a church that doesn't exist. Exactly. It's going to be great. And man, last Sunday, almost 1,500 people showed up here. Not only to hear a message of God's love, but to experience God's love and grace firsthand through you. Because you are a reflection of God's love and grace to the people in our community by creating environments here that make it easy for people and that say, no perfect people allowed. Come as you are, show up. And because of that, you're making a difference. See, from the very beginning of Westbridge Church, here's what we've determined. We are determined to sacrifice our preferences for the sake of those who are far from God. We're going to sacrifice our preferences for the sake of those who are far from God. All of us have preferences. There's things that I kind of wish this. I wish this was a little different. I wish that was a little different. But what we've discovered is this. This is what love looks like. This is what love looks like in your relationships, isn't it? That you have certain preferences that you choose to set aside and sacrifice for the benefit of other people. As a matter of fact, every parent knows this well. That you sacrifice your preferences for the sake of those who are dependent on you. A perfect example of this. Just last night, my 3-year-old woke up at 3:30 in the morning screaming in gibberish. I don't know what he was dreaming about, but it was a huge sacrifice as my wife got up and went in there. And I found her about 5:30 this morning, like cliffhanging off the edge of a bottom bunk bed. And I was like, honey, get up, go back to bed. And man, here's what we do though. Why do we do those things as parents? Because that's what love looks like. You don't even question it, right? You just go, you know what? I'm going to lay aside my preference for the sake of those who are depending on us. And folks, that's what it looks like in God's family as well. For those of us who go, man, we've experienced the love and grace of God to such a degree that we're willing to set aside some of our own preferences for the sake of those who are just coming into God's family, for the sake of those who are dependent on these environments to be introduced to the love of Jesus, because that's what love looks like. And do you know what happens when we do that? Here are some of the things that people have been saying to us. I was someone who always believed in God but was never one for going to church. After attending Westbridge, that has now changed. I really enjoyed the message and the atmosphere. I grew up in another church, and it felt more like a chore rather than something relatable or inspiring. Westbridge seemed like God was speaking directly to me during the talk. Another one said, I did not come from a church-going background, and the environment at Westbridge made it very easy to attend, and I felt welcome to come back. Another one, not only did our children enjoy church and come away with a great message, it was also a casual atmosphere, and my husband and I didn't feel pressured. Someone else writes this, my life is a mess. You name it, we've got issues. If it weren't for Westbridge and the no perfect people allowed type of environment here, I wouldn't have any hope in surviving what life has thrown my way. The people and messages make me feel like God cares about me and loves me even when things are so far from perfect, and for that I'm so grateful. Another one, the pastor is so intelligent and easy on the eyes. All right, that's fake. That's not a real one. Somebody else recently said this. I'd always had a faith in God. I'd always had a belief in God, but I had given up on the idea that church could actually be something that was good for anybody. Think about that. I believe in God. I want to connect with God, but church is getting in the way. And so we determined from day one, we would be a church that sacrifices our preferences to remove the stuff that's getting in the way between people and God. We will always sacrifice our preferences for the sake of those who are far from God, because that is what love looks like. And folks, Jesus said that he would build his church and that nothing would be able to stand against it. And I believe that today with every fiber of my frail and aging body. The local church is the hope of the world. And because you've set your preferences aside so that people could experience the love and grace of Jesus, marriages have been restored. Forgiveness has been extended. Hope and healing has occurred in people's hearts, and relationships with kids have been restored. We've been able to serve our community locally and around the world, and we are just getting started. I talked to many of you over the last several weeks in anticipation of this series who've shared different stories with me, shared different stories about how you heard a talk on forgiveness and you immediately went home and called someone who had hurt you and forgave. Stories about how you had a belief in God. I'm sure there's a God out there somewhere, but no relationship with you. And then showed up to a service and all of a sudden discovered Jesus actually loves me and cares about me and went to great depths to communicate that to me. And said, man, I need that in my life. I talked to several of you in the last couple of weeks who attended for a long time. And then finally something clicked and then said, man, okay, I surrender my life to Jesus. It's so incredible to be a part of. And over the next few months, we have an opportunity. We have an opportunity to continue to fulfill this mission at an even greater capacity by building a building. Now, here's what you've got to know. You absolutely must know this about the future of Westbridge Church. The mission is people. The building is a tool. The mission is people. The building is simply a tool. It is not, let's establish a mission so that we can one day build a building. The mission is the mission. The mission is people. And the building supports the mission. It's always about the mission. And yes, we're going to need financial resources to do it, but it's so much bigger than that. The mission is about people, and so we've got to do everything that we can do to fulfill that mission to the greatest capacity possible. And while nobody who's a part of setting this up every week is scared off by the work of being portable, we have people show up here and they set everything up and they work hard and no one is afraid of the work. Everyone shows up and enjoys it and laughs together and talks together. It's not the work of it that makes it difficult. It's the limitation of it. It's the fact that you can only carry in so much on a Sunday morning. It's the fact that you can only do so much when you have a building 6 hours out of the week. And see, last year, 176 people checked a box during one of our services and said that they wanted to start following Jesus for the first time. 176 people in 2017. That's amazing. And we want to keep doing that for years and years and years to come. And here's what we've discovered. As I've talked with people over the last few weeks, a couple of things have really risen out of these conversations. First is this. I've met with several families who showed up because they saw a white sandwich board sign on 241 that simply said Westbridge Church with an arrow. And they're like driving somewhere on a Sunday. We're like, okay, let's go. I'm like, what? That's how you came to Westbridge? That's crazy. I've met several families who that's their story. I've been sharing this with a few people over the last couple of weeks that one of my favorite stories is we had this sandwich board sign out on 241, and we were meeting in middle school east. Five blocks, you'd have to turn at 241 and then drive five blocks and then discover that we were in a school. And so the people were showing up to it, and we had one volunteer who would, at the end of service, go and pick up the signs for us. And this one week, he came back, and there was a big tire groove over the sign, which is still there. And apparently, the wind had blown it out, and someone had driven over the sign. And as he was grabbing it, and he had to run out in the intersection to grab it, and another car came whizzing by. He said, man, he's hanging his head low. He's just like, man, I'm really sorry. I'm like, what happened? He goes, well, as soon as that car went whizzing by, I turned around, and I gave him the bird. He said, so you can imagine, I was holding the Westbridge sign in one hand. He said, probably not the advertising you were looking for. I said, man, no perfect people allowed, right? So, but here's the reality. When I think about that, I go, man, if there's families who showed up here and have been impacted by the love of Jesus because of a sandwich board sign with an arrow that was five blocks away from a middle school that we happen to be meeting in, how many more people are going to show up and experience the love of Jesus because of an actual building that you can see from the road? The second thing that's come up is this. I've talked to several families who didn't show up for a long time because we were in a school. And the overwhelming thinking in our culture, it's just natural, is you go to church in a church. Duh. Right? Which makes sense. We were just not on their radar, or they're hesitant to show up. And eventually a family member started coming, or a friend started coming and said, no, you got to check it out. And they came in and they liked it. But I get it. The overwhelming thinking in our culture is, where do you go to church? I go to church in a church. How many more people in our community are hesitant and won't show up until we have a building for them to show up to? Well, it kind of sounds like you're all about the numbers, Jeremiah. Absolutely I am. And I'll tell you why. Every single number represents a person. And every single person has a story, and every story matters to God. And that number, that number represents your parents. It represents your mom or your dad. It represents your family members, your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends, maybe even your spouse. So absolutely, I am all about the numbers. Because as long as there is any number of people in our community who are far from God, then we've got a mission to accomplish. And you also need to know this. I know from experience that any church has a difficult time getting into their first permanent facility. There's just going to be natural hurdles that need to be overcome. But I will tell you this, and I don't say this for pity. I have never heard of a church that's hit quite as many hurdles as we have. From the very beginning, we started raising money in 2012, and we thought it would be 2, maybe 3 years tops before we got into a building. And we put in an offer on a movie theater that was for sale at the time, and many of you might have been around then, and then someone else had a contract already on it, and they extended their due diligence for 30 days, and then 30 days more, and then 30 days more. They did that 9 times. And by the end, they said, okay, you guys are next in line. They withdrew their offer. Awesome. And then I got a call 2 hours later on the same day and said, you guys are now third in line. What happened? Well, a couple other people jumped in there. 2 days later, our broker called and said, somebody bought it and closed on it. They own it. Paid cash, closed in 48 hours. I was like, okay, you got to know, on buildings that size, that is pretty rare for that to happen. Then the guy that bought it said, I'm going to open it as a theater, but I only want to open half, and I want to lease the other half of the building to Westbridge. Great. So we're going to build it out, and we're going to have this, our own parking, our own entrance. It's going to be great. And we got an architect. We drew up the plans. And the minute that we were about to go sign, he pulled out. Said, you know, I changed my mind. I'm going to open it as a theater. And so then, and we're like, we're glad he did. It's a great theater. And then we looked at a drywall supply company, a warehouse right by the theater. And the city told us, no, you can't. It's not zoned properly. We looked at another warehouse in St. Michael, not zoned properly. Some of you were around. We went under contract for 12 acres of land in Albertville, not zoned properly. Then we submitted 22 more properties to the city, not zoned properly. 26 no's over a period of 3 years. And it's just like, man, I don't know what's next. I don't know where to go. And in 2016, God opened the door for us to purchase 30 acres with the correct zoning. And we pulled the plug. We pulled the trigger on that. And then we got on the land and we discovered there's a wetland on the edge of our property. And this wetland, believe it or not, actually touches a ditch that runs 1.5 miles to a creek that runs 2 miles to the Crow, which flows into the Mississippi River. And so this puddle on your land is part of the Gulf of Mexico. That was my reaction too. I was like, Am I being punked? Is there hidden cameras here? Like, what's going on? And they said, no, absolutely. It's hydraulically linked to the Mississippi River, which means the Army Corps of Engineers had to get involved. So more hurdles, more hurdles, more hurdles. Here's what's amazing. In spite of all that, and I don't say that for pity. The reason I say all that is because of this. We stand here today, and the Army Corps of Engineers has signed off on it, and the Planning and Zoning Commission has signed off on it, and the City Council has signed off on it, and everybody's signed off, and we have no more hurdles. The last hurdle that we have to face is simply a financial one. And when we cross that hurdle, we're going to be able to build this building. My prayer is this year. Now, God has given us this opportunity. All of the hurdles that have been in the way are gone. But here's the thing about opportunities. God-given opportunities need to be taken in the life of the opportunity. And we know that that's true. Most opportunities have a shelf life, don't they? Like, you remember when you decided not to invest in Apple stock when it was $9 a share? It's now $170 a share, right? Ouch, that hurts. Opportunities don't last forever. I want you to know that we are at a crossroads as a church with a tremendous opportunity for us to be able to build this year. And I want us to take advantage of that opportunity. Not simply so that we can say that we built a building, but because of how it will impact our mission to help people find and follow Jesus. Now, I know the temptation is to immediately start asking, okay, what's it going to cost and what's my part? And that's all super important information, and we're going to get to that later. Today, I simply want to remind us of our mission and inspire us to grab hold of that mission like we never have before. And my hope is that through this series, we will all take a step of spiritual growth in some way. I don't want us to get so caught up in the numbers yet that it becomes about the building and not about the mission. It's mission first, and then the numbers in the building come up and support that. And so I believe if we don't take this next step, I think we're at a critical juncture as a church, that if we don't take this next step and take it soon, I think there's going to be people in our community whose interaction with Jesus, whose story, their next chapter has yet to be written, and we will not have the opportunity to play a part in that. And so with the few minutes we have, I want to share a story from a guy named Nehemiah that will help answer, how can I be involved in this series? How can I be involved over the next 5 weeks as a part of the All In initiative? What does that look like for me? And not just from a checkbook perspective, but from a spiritual perspective. So let's share this story in the next few minutes, and then we'll close. Here's the context. The nation of Israel has been captured and taken into exile in a faraway country. And different empires have risen, and now it's the Persian Empire. And Nehemiah is actually the cupbearer to the king, Artaxerxes. Now, that's a pretty sweet job if you like wine. Okay, but it's there's also a downside, because part of that job means you have to test the wine for poison. So, you know. But the upside is you have access to the king. And so here's where we pick up the story. In Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah is writing. He says, in late autumn, in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was at the fortress of Susa, and Hanani, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. I asked them about the Jews who had returned from captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. So a number of Jews had been returning to their homeland after being in exile. He says, how are things going? They said to me, things are not going well for those who return to the province of Judah. They're in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down, and the gates have been destroyed by fire. The walls of Jerusalem had been torn down, and this was an embarrassment to the people of God, and it left them open and vulnerable to attack. So there was a physical reality that needed to be addressed so that the people could return back home. And folks, this is exactly where we find ourselves as a church. There is a physical reality that needs to be addressed so that we can accomplish the mission that God has given us of inviting people back into relationship with God at a greater capacity. And so, here's three simple things that we learned from Nehemiah about how we can engage in this all-in initiative. Number one, let God move your heart. Let God move your heart. When Cherry and I first started talking about starting a church, our hearts were broken over the fact that we did a demographic study and we discovered that almost 80% of people who lived in our area were not connected to any type of faith community. And it wasn't that they didn't have a belief in God. It wasn't that they were, you know, didn't want to be a part of a church. It's just life kind of got in the way. For a lot of people, they got went to church when they were a kid and then got married and had kids and just life got in the way. Or maybe they even got burned by a church at one point. And it started to break our hearts that there were so many people that wanted to connect with God, but there wasn't a vehicle to help get them there. And so our hearts were moved to say, we've got to do something about this. And when you look at the story of Nehemiah, this is his reaction to the news from Jerusalem. He says, when I heard this, I sat down and wept. His heart was moved because of the condition of the nation of Israel. And the next step is going to require resources. This next step for us as a church is going to require resources, but my number one prayer is that throughout this all-in initiative, it's not about the financial resources. It's that God would capture our hearts, that our hearts would be moved for what he wants to do in the lives of people, and that we would get such a sense of vision that the financial reality would just be a follow-up to what God is doing in us, in our own hearts. So allow yourself to be moved by what's taking place. And then secondly, the next thing Nehemiah did was this: engage on a spiritual level. Engage on a spiritual level. What does that mean, to engage spiritually? It means that we give our focus, time, and attention to God during this season. Look at what Nehemiah did. It says, "In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven." He engaged on a spiritual level. He recognized the need, and then his reaction was to begin to pray. Fast and pray. And the challenge with engaging spiritually is the temptation to respond in a way that has more to do with our feelings than with God's leading. And so it's tempting. That's why we don't want to look at the numbers right away, but rather just let this sink in, this season that we're in as a church, and ask God to lead us. Because the temptation for us is to have a knee-jerk reaction and try to work through the math instead of just going, "God, what would you have me do? How can I participate in this? God, lead us. We need you. Our future is in your hands." And so we have to recognize the need in the lives of people in our area and engage on a spiritual level and just simply pray, "God, how can we respond? Open our hearts, open our minds, soften us to be able to listen to you during this next season." Engage spiritually. And then number three, take ownership of the solution. The only reason that Westbridge even exists is because so many of you have said, if there are 80% of people in our area that are far from God, I want to be a part of changing that. I want to be a part of that. And you step up and you serve others and you give generously, and because you want to be a part of the solution. And by the time we get to Nehemiah chapter 2, he's very distraught. The nation of Israel is in ruins, and he's just an ordinary man, but he has an opportunity. He is the cupbearer to the king. And so his heart is moved. He begins to pray and ask God, and then he takes ownership of the solution. He seizes the opportunity in the life of the opportunity. He goes to the king, and he tells him how distraught he is. Now, this is not something that you would do if you were a cupbearer. You could actually be killed for being sad in the king's presence. And yet, he takes this risk. He's seizing the opportunity, and so it says this, Nehemiah 2, "I said to the king, may the king live forever." In other words, he's trying to butter him up before he makes this request, right? "Oh, king, you look so good today. Is that a new robe? Have you been working out? Looking good. May you live forever. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire." And the king asked, "Well, how can I help you?" See, this could have gone one of two ways: off with his head, or how can I help you? And he says, "How can I help you?" And I can imagine Nehemiah's heart is just beating fast. And he says, with a prayer to the God of heaven. He's like, "Oh God, help me. With a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, if it pleased the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried." Nehemiah sees a God-given opportunity, and he takes ownership and says, "I want to be a part of the solution." He stands up and he acts. And God ultimately uses those whose hearts are moved, who engage spiritually, and then who are willing to say, "God, I'm available. I want to be a part of the solution." All in, this initiative over the next 5 weeks is not just about building a building. It's about what God will do in us and what God will do through us as we fulfill our mission at an even greater capacity. And so my prayer is that through this process, we will be moved, our hearts will be moved, that we will engage spiritually and begin to ask God for wisdom, and then at the appropriate time that we will stand up, that we will act, and that we will seize the opportunity and invite even more people to find and follow Jesus. Now, next week, we're going to be giving everybody a book, a full, I think it's 15 pages, full color book that highlights different parts of the church. It'll have building plans in there. It'll have all kinds of things, initiatives, and things that we're going after to try to build the building this year. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to come back next week, and I want you to grab one of those. And I said this in the beginning. We do not say this very often. Very, very rarely do we ever hype particular series or particular Sundays. It's part of just saying every week is consistent. But this is the one time I'm going to tell you, I'm going to challenge you. Make it a priority to be here every week during this series. This is a do not miss type of series. This is the most significant series and the most significant step that we have taken as a church family. And so don't miss. Be here every week of this series, and I'm thrilled to see what God will do as we go all in together. And over the next several weeks, we're going to be talking through, here's what it looks like, here's our part, here's how we can respond, and here's what it's going to take for us to get there. So I'm challenging you, make it a priority to not miss a single week.